You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard to another episode of New Retirement Radio with the Prout Gang, including Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. We're scrambling around here. First of all, trying to find imitation Karen Carpenter that's as good as Karen herself. So I think to celebrate, we ought to just maybe play one of her songs at the break just to see what it is she sounds like. Or what she sounds like, rather. Good morning, everyone. Good. If you do have a question of a financial nature, we are talking finances here this morning.
What, hold on there.
Hey, Heidi. Yeah. Hello. Hi. Who's that?
Everybody's mics are on. Fair warning.
All right.
Okay.
Yes, say that again, Heidi.
Well, just keep going.
Yeah. Okay. She says. All right. So I am Dennis Prout, CFP, CPWA, and managing executive of Prout Financial Design. That's not what ME stands for. It's Master Lead Advisor. And then Heidi Cartwright, our own RACP and Executive Director, Nathan Prout, Master Lead Advisor, and Tariff King here this morning. Going to be talking about tariffs.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Beth Shire, our Marketing Director, Director of Marketing. Good morning, Beth. Way back over there.
Good morning. Oh, I'm... Can we hear Beth? Check, check. I'm just being a problem child. You want me to switch?
There's a weird mechanics here today.
Last week it was the other mic.
Pull that one over there.
Check.
Is that working?
Check, check. No.
Oh, for two.
That's really strange. Those two mics.
Bad juju this morning.
check, check. Ooh, got it.
There it is.
Found myself. Good morning, everyone.
There she is.
Jambalaya.
Welcome
there
aboard.
There we go. There we go. Well, it's great to be here. Your questions, if you do have a question of a financial nature, that's why we are here this morning to talk about finances. And if you have a specific question regarding your own situation or something you'd like to shed light on, our number, either text or call, is, Ron, if you would.
You can call us at 947-0023, 947-0023, 231 area code.
Well, it's great to be here. Today, we're on the verge of economic numbers, a bunch of them. And we have been talking a lot about the economy, and it's been very interesting to see yesterday, the stock market's response to Google not having to pay near the fee or penalty that was possibly going to be imposed to Google. They were thinking it was going to be in the billions. Apparently, it was a paltry $430 million.
Yeah, they were talking about forcing them to sell Chrome as well, which is, I believe, their primary revenue source, too.
Wow. Amazing. And I was telling the staff it was listed as among the safest stocks by Valueline, among others, over the weekend as I was reviewing things.
Well, I said that once your name becomes a verb, you know that you've gotten out there into society, because we all say, just Google it, or go to Google. And so when you get to that level of acceptance, that's A good market share.
Yeah. That's there's like, a song, Love is a Verb, but some people would say Google is a verb as well.
It's like facial tissue. We call it Kleenex, which right. is a brand name.
Which so, you have so, right here in
yeah,
front of
we,
you.
We have them right there.
As an example.
Kleenex.
So nice.
All right.
So four charts on why the U.S. economy could stay resilient. Now, for those who can't see charts right now.
That's why Dennis chose this article.
He's holding it up to the microphone, so you know that should help.
Waving in front of us so we can see it. Thank you so much. So the United States economy is at a crossroads. Cracks are forming and growth is slowing as tariff policies weigh on hiring and curb consumer spending. Or not. On the other hand, generative artificial intelligence is driving a surge in productivity. The question is, can AI fill the cracks in the U.S. economy? Now, this is from Mr. Jared Franz, who is with Capital Group, written on August 28th, relatively recent, 5 days ago, some would say. 6 days ago, never mind. My view, he says, is that headwinds from trade restrictions are real, but tailwinds from AI could be even more powerful. His view. Now, that's the difficult part of this. Still, no one knows. We have yet to see. And the other part of this is, given the other headwinds, possibly, I don't want to get into the politics of this, but there are a lot of variables out there. And trying to guess which way or direction is going to go, very difficult to do. Those who are making a buy on Google is a great example. Google, you want to buy Google? What a boring company. I mean, they've been around forever. Could anything good happen to Google? Well, it just did. Because the anticipation was a much greater fee imposed by the jury, if you will. Well, the jury was out, and they said, no, not nearly as much. So we don't always know the future, but we can certainly have opinions. Here are four charts to help explain why the U.S. economy may continue to show resilience. R-E-S-I-L-E-I-E-N-C-E. Now, I just misspelled it intentionally. It is R-E-S-I-L-I-E-N-C-E, resilience. I'm not sure why I'm spelling it because I find it a relatively complex word. But investments of AI have surpassed the dot-com era. The dot-com era, which most would say was the 2000s, early 2000s, for 3 years. The market swooned, absolutely, unequivocally. He says tech companies have poured hundreds of billions of dollars into AI despite concerns about future returns on their investment. Well, obviously, they think it's a good investment, so they're making it. They're also reinvesting their own money into their own stock at a pace never seen before. $1 trillion already this year. As we mentioned last week, for those who were with us last week, yes. Most of that spending has been directed at building electricity-intensive data centers. The boom has benefited certain semiconductor, industrial, and power generation companies to a significant effect. Of course, all that spending begs the question, are we headed for a bust that rivals the tech wreck in 2000? I wouldn't rule out an AI winter, he says, but the 1990s PC and internet revolution is different from today's tech story. The former, which is back in 2000, was about hardware, connectivity, networks, and information, whereas AI is mostly, and I'm putting the word mostly in there, about extracting accumulated knowledge and using it. So some of us are just starting to ask AI questions in regards to our own businesses, as I did a couple of days ago.
What did you ask it?
I asked it this. I said, we have a weekly radio show and about finance. I didn't know you were going to ask that question, by the way.
Actually, I have a printout of what you asked.
Ooh,
and
the Beth.
Reply, actually, if you would like it.
She's got a copy.
Wait a minute.
So I
may have
read.
Lied. I may have taken it out of my folder. Let me just double check.
she says.
Well, Beth looks so AI, though. All AI is accumulated human intelligence, right? What we know, AI knows. AI does not know things we don't know, right?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Its self-learning capabilities are just starting to be shown. Okay. So you don't have that?
I apologize. It's on my desk.
Okay. So what I said in general was this. We offer this show. We're considering doing an on-site program in a classroom, as I brought up last week. And I said, if we did this, what should we do or think about or look for, given that we're considering it? I thought it'd be fun to just see what it said. Now, we're using Perplexity, which has been recommended to us by Integrated, our registered investment advisor. And I was just amazed at the potential possibilities that it recommended, as well as what we should be concerned about, given that we might do something like that. Number one in its list was the technical difficulties, as you mentioned, Ron, and also several other things, too.
So Ron's right there with AI.
He is.
Okay.
Indeed.
On the cutting edge.
So I questioned or queried it because I wanted an expansive question and answer session, and I asked it to ask me three questions as a part of it so that I knew it would be on track. And I was surprised at the questions. Did I answer any of those questions? No. I didn't go any further with it. I was just curious what it would initially say so that it could help us determine whether or not it could make sense. Now, obviously, we have to have a lot of other conversations and that sort of thing, but it was amazing what it generated back in terms of problem-solving or potential problem-solving ideas that we could use along with our own, as well as other people that we might question, such as Mr. Ron Jolly. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Perplexity.
Perplexity, yep. I think it's called perplexity.ai or something like that. Ultimately, the biggest winners of the AI spending cycle may not yet exist, possibly. Early pioneers like Cisco built the internet infrastructure that gave rise to companies like Netflix, Amazon, and Google. Today's AI infrastructure build-out could similarly pave the way for a new generation of businesses to flourish. Technology, AI powers new tech investment cycle. Technology and R&D spend as a percentage of our gross domestic product. It's upwards of 7.5% of our total revenue as an economy. And that number had gone down to about 5% in 2005. So it is on a significant upswing in terms of technology. Now, number two I thought was most interesting. Productivity surges are rare, and this is one of them. Big surges in productivity are rare for developed economies. In the U.S., it took years for the personal computer and internet to deliver substantial productivity gains. I believe AI may have already ushered a new era of exceptional productivity. And that's something bolstered, if you will, by Mr. Scott Bessent, who said he expected the productivity to be seen in the economy by January 26. Okay. Mm-hmm. He says, Mr. Franz, I think U.S. productivity could nearly double to an annual rate of 4% per year over the next 5 years. So that would be a 20% increase in productivity. Now, obviously, some jobs are going to be displaced, but other ones will be created, many of which we may not even be aware of right at this point in time. Because it's not as though it were an exact physics thing. Mass or speed equals mass times whatever. Whose ever theory that was? Can anybody remember physics? I mean, it goes all the way back to, 11th grade? Seriously.
It's been around even longer than Google.
That's crazy stuff. Oh, mass equals, what is that?
E equals mc squared.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Energy equals mass times something, whatever.
Different show.
Pathetic. U.S. widens lead in labor productivity. So the numbers are showing labor productivity benchmarked to 2001. Our numbers are zooming past other developed countries in terms of productivity. Compared to Europe, Japan, Great Britain. That three, labor markets are rewiring for the future. From sewing machines to cars, new technologies have transformed labor markets. The personal computer's impact on labor markets serves as a good reminder that tech innovations have created newly more numerous and often higher paying jobs after an initial period of job displacement. So those higher paying jobs are already being seen in some sectors. Vis-a-vis Meta, hiring these leaders in the AI area and paying them $250,000 per year at least. Four, signs point to a slowdown, not a recession. Signs point to a slowdown. This is not a science. Thank you. There are many reasons to worry about the U.S. economy. Inflation has ticked higher, job creation is down, and GDP is weakening. I believe these are signs of a mid-cycle economic slowdown rather than a recession. This doesn't mean that there won't be pain, particularly since the full events of President Trump's tariffs have yet to be realized. Neither have the tax cuts,
right?
I would say, in concert with that. So we don't know. However, there are many experts that believe the revenues will significantly increase, not only from tariffs, but also from tax cuts, which is opposite most of what most government entities who measure these sorts of things would tell us. And here. The U.S. economy appears to be, he says, in mid-cycle. Now, is it all, rose-colored glasses? It never is. We don't know the impacts of tariffs, as I mentioned. We don't know the true impact of tax cuts, how much more revenue that's going to generate. But we also don't know whether or not the federal government will actually get control of its spending side, which it would appear there seems to be a fight, a dust-up happening in Washington, D.C. about some of these cuts that the White House is trying to make versus Congress.
What role, if any, do you think electricity plays with all of this AI generation and the demand for data centers? We need to create electricity. What do you make of that?
It's insane, the demand,
yeah,
which no one anticipated. I mean, Iran, that is a great example. And we've talked about this before. Yeah. I mean, 10 years ago, they anticipated that we would be producing so much electricity, power companies would have to buy it from us. That's what these prognosticators were saying. Yeah. It's amazing how wrong they were, because we can't generate enough right now.
And I think it's also pushing companies to look at what's the cost of that energy, because we have to look for the most efficient, cost-effective types of energy to generate what we need for the power to drive some of these other mm-hmm. industries. And so I think that is really reshaping some of the energy fields or the energy emphasis in this era, and you're seeing a lot of talk going back to nuclear energy and things like that, where people had moved.
Microsoft on. Buying a nuclear power plant, what did they buy, Palisades or whichever one it was? I mean, 5 years ago, you would have said, that is the craziest idea I've ever heard. Microsoft's not going to buy a power plant. Well, by golly, they went out and didn't buy it. And because they just wrote a check. It wasn't chump change. But, you know, $1 billion here, $1 billion there, they could afford it. So why not? It's amazing. Recognizing the fact that we're on a trajectory of growth that boggles our minds, that's where we're at right now.
They
it's
have
crazy.
Something called small modular reactors, nuclear reactors.
I've heard about those.
You can buy to power up your individual factory.
Yeah.
Your own nuclear
reactor.
Pretty soon they'll have them for our homes. Instead of having a boring old generator all back, we'll all have our small nuclear power plant.
Out in the backyard.
I'm sure that'll be fine.
Don't let Fido go too close to that. He might not like it.
Fido has 8 legs now.
Yes. Well, we digress.
We have a couple of text messages in from listeners.
Sure.
We had mentioned, Heidi mentioned Google is a verb, or it is a, yes. Instead of saying search engine, we say Google.
Google it.
And somebody had a thought on that, and they said, hand me a Kleenex and a Q-tip so I can clean this scratch I'm putting a Band-Aid on. I need an aspirin and some chapstick while I play ping pong on my jet ski in the jacuzzi. Never mind, I'll lose it in the dumpster. I'll toss it in the dumpster. Yes, I will have some coffee from my thermos. So those are all brand names that have become generic.
Exactly.
Which is
what
you want to accomplish.
Great text. Yeah.
The same person said, I just called Walmart about a delayed online delivery order. A new voice answered, I'm the new AI assistant. Bear with me, I'm still learning. After the female voice asked a few short questions, I received an acceptable answer within only a few minutes. Way easier and faster than their previous system, with a combination of unanswerable questions and up to 10 to 15 minutes or more to get a human and no language or accent barrier. So there's a vote for AI.
That's interesting.
And finally, at least at this break here, Perplexity, the AI program you use, somebody said is a much better search tool versus Google. I've been using it for over a year. Do a side-by-side search on a topic with the same question and see how much better their app is versus Google.
Wow. That's interesting.
Google.
Yeah. When we attended a conference with Integrated, this was in Austin? I think it was.
Yes, it was in Austin, Texas.
There was a book there on AI leadership, leadership using AI. And he gave us an example right up on the screen of querying Perplexity. And I would say everyone in the audience was stunned at its responses, how accurate they were, and how he was able to check them, if you will, so they didn't go off into la-la land with crazy, stupid answers, you know, that you've seen before.
Well, I thought one of the most important things I learned during that talk was it's very important how to learn to ask the questions in the right way to get the answers that you're looking for. And he had a whole system for that. And that really sort of opened my eyes a little bit. You really need to learn how to use the tool correctly. It's not just gonna, you know, it's partly on you to ask the right questions.
To, in essence, have collars on the program to make certain that doesn't go off into, yes, la-la land, as we mentioned. Next, tariffs. Are they the solution to America's debt problem?
Yes. So this comes to us from LPL Financial, their chief fixed income strategist, Lawrence Gillum. And bear with us a little bit, because this is a little dense with some of the content, but we do still think it is important information to... there's some good nuggets in here, I guess. So, they're talking. They still expect some bond market action to continue to swing between concerns over slowing economic data, which could result in lower yields, and larger debt deficit dynamics, which could result in higher yields. But according to recent analysis from the Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO, tariff revenue could meaningfully impact both sides of the bond market pendulum, which on net could be beneficial to the Treasury market. So as noted by the CBO, total government outlays for 2025 are roughly $7 trillion, with 2025 revenue equal to around $5.2 trillion, resulting in a budget deficit of nearly $2 trillion per year, or over 6% of gross domestic product.
Well, only $2 trillion.
Only $2 trillion, right. So with the recent signing into law of the Republicans' One Big Beautiful Bill Act, initial estimates suggest, in a best-case scenario, that deficits will continue to run in the 6 to 7% range of GDP, suggesting Treasury issuance will need to remain elevated to fill the budget gap. The U.S. government has $37 trillion in total debt outstanding, and that number grows by $1 trillion every 6 months or so. Bigger budget deficits equal more Treasury issuance, all else equal. So the number trillion is thrown around a lot these days, it seems. So I thought I would try to bring a little perspective to just how big that number is as we wrap our minds around it. So assuming you were counting to 1 million and each number took 1 second for you to count, it would take you 12 days to count to 1 million.
Assuming 24 hours in the day you were counting, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. Same assumptions. If you were counting to a billion, does anybody have a guess of how long that would take you?
Well, it's 1,000 million, so it'd be 1,000 times how many days did you say?
Yeah, so about 31 years.
31 years.
Oh, my word.
Approximately.
To count to a billion.
Right.
So
right,
a million is how many days did you say again?
12 days.
12 days.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to count to a billion.
So that sort of escalated quickly.
Take that off my bucket list.
Right.
Yeah, forget that one.
But let's go from a billion to a trillion, just for fun. So same assumptions. Anybody have a guess on how long it would take to count to a trillion?
So a billion is 31 years?
That's roughly, yeah.
Just reference.
Five light years.
Five light years.
It may as well be, Ron. It's 31,000 years, approximately.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think that's, you know, I don't think you could do that in a lifetime. All right.
But that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's even older than Putin and Xi are going to be, right? Talking about how old.
Not by much.
We're going to live forever someday.
They say the first person to live to be 150 is alive now.
Wow.
Not really.
How did get there? I don't know. It's confusing already.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, Ron. Sorry.
Yep.
So tariffs generate direct revenue for the federal government, creating an alternative income stream to traditional taxation. This additional revenue can reduce the Treasury's borrowing needs. So with tariff collection expected to increase revenues and decrease deficits by $4 trillion over 10 years, the Treasury Department can scale back its bond issuance accordingly. This reduced supply of new Treasuries, all else equal, tends to support bond prices and can help contain yields. For a government managing substantial debt levels, this revenue diversification provides fiscal flexibility that markets generally view favorably. So while risks certainly exist, particularly if tariffs spark significant inflation requiring monetary tightening, the near to medium term setup appears more favorable for Treasury investors now than it did without tariff revenue.
And that's what a lot of bond managers would tend to say today, that they think there's significant value in owning bonds.
So exciting.
And been known to set your world on fire.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm excited. You know, I made 7% this year. Well, 7% is not so boring if you haven't lost any, right?
Right.
So, you know, am I saying you can expect that rate of return? No, never. Could say that. Compliance, I'm just kidding, I promise. But really, if those returns are realized, it could make them interesting in terms of an investment that could be helpful to alleviate some of the volatility in the stock market or anticipated.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's interesting. You bet.
Sylvia Trench, I admire your luck. Mr.
Bond.
Bond.
James Bond.
You know, it's weird you didn't say municipal bond there.
Bond. James Bond. That's great. Another version of Bond. All right. Thanks, Nathan. Now, next, the Wall Street's big bad idea for your 401k. It almost like the, it sounds like the big bad wolf, Heidi.
It does. And so this article, like you said, is from the Wall Street Journal. But before we jump into the article, I think we need a little context because this article just jumps right into the argument. So let's educate ourselves a little bit here. A new executive order could bring alternative assets to 401ks, creating potential growth opportunities for alternative asset managers. And that is what the article is discussing, for and against. So on October 7th...
What would non-traditional investments be?
That would be private equity, credit, real estate, digital assets, commodities, okay, infrastructure, all these different type of things.
Bitcoin in your 401k, Ron.
On August 7th of 2025, President Trump signed an executive order, and you have to enjoy all these titles of these executive orders. This one is called Democratizing Access to Alternative Assets for 401k Investors. So it's aiming to broaden the retirement investors' access to these alternative investments or these private market investments. However, it is not law because of the order mandates a 180-day review by the Department of Labor to reexamine and potentially soften guidance under ERISA, which is the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, that has historically discouraged fiduciaries from offering these alternative investment options. In parallel, the SEC, or the Securities and Exchange Commission, is asking to consider revising rules around accredited and qualified investor status to facilitate a broader participation by individual retirement savers.
Yeah, so accredited investors can mean simply the greater fool theory as well.
Exactly. Well, there are rules out there that you have to have some sophistication in the investment markets to be qualified to invest in certain kinds of assets. So,
I have to insert here. It always is interesting to me. It makes me think of Charlie Munger, who was Warren Buffett's cohort there. He always said if a prospectus is 2 inches thick and you don't understand most of what it says, you should probably steer clear of that investment. And yeah. These are great examples of such investments. Go ahead, Heidi, please.
So asset management firms have benefited from the adoption of private market exposure across several major investment types, and the retirement segment would be yet another opportunity for these firms. So this has led to significant efforts among alternative asset managers to penetrate into the wealth management market, and that includes our 401k plans. So now let's go to the article that we talked about, The Big Bad Idea, and this is written by Jason Zweig, I believe. And he is the writer of the column, The Intelligent Investor, and we all want to be intelligent investors. So let's listen to what he says. He definitely comes down on one side of the issue with his first line. It says, Wall Street is promoting a colossal lie. So money managers are in a desperate race to stuff illiquid so-called private market assets into funds anyone can buy, including your 401k. They say we all can earn high return and with low risk on non-traded alternatives like private equity, venture capital, and private real estate. Why investors should say no to this is what the author now is going to talk about. So he talks about two different kinds of funds. One of them is an interval fund. This is a structure that generally allows investors to buy as many shares as they wish at any time, but only to sell limited amounts at predetermined intervals, typically 5% of shares per quarter. A second type of fund is the tender offer fund, which may, but doesn't have to, redeem up to 2.5% per quarter. And this shows a weakness, Dennis, in these assets. As we're listening to the description of this, it just points out the illiquidity of these kinds of assets.
Yeah, using these people to decide when to sell at a whim that you can't control and they entirely do is definitely dangerous when they are in essence valuing their own assets. Well, I don't know, what's my house worth today? You know, you can see how that can be dangerous versus having perhaps the market determine what your investment is worth. And we all know the beauty is in the beholder's
eye of the beholder.
Beholder, not necessarily the eye of the buyer. So the buyer and seller have to come together to create a deal, if you will, and their views of value may be very different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the idea, the author does concede, is in some ways a laudable one. It is to encourage investors to stay put for longer periods rather than fleeing at the worst possible time. In principle, the managers of the interval funds can buy illiquid assets without being forced to sell them in a downturn when investors want their money back. Because private assets don't trade, it's the fund managers, not the market, that determines what they're worth. That enables the managers to report much fewer and lower fluctuations than public funds do. Then they get to declare that private funds are low risk. So it sounds like he doesn't totally believe that.
Yeah, it's control over information. Hmm. So if you look at a publicly traded REIT, real estate investment trust, versus a privately traded one, the publicly traded one, it's discounted because of that illiquidity within the portfolio and can be discounted significantly depending on what the market views. Now, is the market always correct? No. As evidenced by Google, they were wrong about that. So was most people were. But it immediately got corrected given the change. And that immediate correction cannot occur when you're limiting who makes that decision.
Is this kind of takeaway like the whole idea of checks and balances?
It is. It's called accountability. If you've got two people counting, the result may be very different than just one person counting, if you will.
So Jason would agree with you, Dennis, because he says it's ridiculous. In the real world, risk is the chance of losing money, which has nothing to do with how often prices are reported. In fact, he quotes Cliff, and I'm not going to say his last name because I don't know how I would pronounce that, but he is co-founder of AQR Capital Management, and he calls this kind of thing volatility laundering, not a very positive phrase, I would say.
Not money laundering, but volatility laundering.
Exactly.
Which may be confused sometimes with money laundering, and some people may equate the two as being the same.
And he points out, which you did with the REITs, that private real estate with borrowed money back in 2012 had years of excellent performance, and then it got hammered after the Federal Reserve raised interest rates sharply in 2022.
So the markets and the economy can have an impact on different investments in different ways.
Right. And the question is, why does all this matter? Well, owning an alternative fund is a lot simpler than selling it. When you own it, you might take the manager's valuations for granted, even if that's a bad idea. When you sell it, the valuation matters a lot, and that's a lot of risk. Until now, investors have been able to sell their shares back to each of the funds that he was looking at a net asset value, but he doesn't see how that can continue. That because it only works until the number of people looking to sell swells and the managers can't raise enough money because they are holding illiquid assets in the funds. The answer for these funds is to move assets to public markets. There the price will be set by what other investors, not the managers, believe that the assets are worth. If that's less than net asset value, that's mainly a problem for the investor in the fund and not the manager.
Now, I want to insert here. All assets can move in price to ridiculous levels, even including treasury bills. Well, that's what Warren Buffett invests in, $400 and some odd billion, I think it is. Well, guess what? During the 2008-2009 crisis, T-bills were yielding less than zero.
Hmm.
Well,
less,
how
less
you
than
say
zero.
Would that be possible? Because the price had been bid up to such a degree that there was no yield on treasury bills at that time. So don't ever believe that the markets can act or cannot act irrationally. Sometimes they do act irrationally, as evidenced by Mr. Alan Greenspan. So, but the key is this. The market made that determination, and everyone could see it in lights. If you can't see it in lights, and it's not shining in the light of day, beware. All of the warning signs are flashing on something like this. And don't take the bait on the greater fool theory. Okay,
right.
In this particular regard.
And the conclusion that the author comes to here, he says, in short, an alternative fund can claim to be low risk and to be at least partly liquid, but sooner or later, it won't be able to sustain both claims. And you just think about if you have this in your 401k and you're retiring and you want to move your assets out and maybe invest in something else, well, if you can't get out of that fund, it could take... And we've seen with REITs taking up to 5 years to unwind a position because they're only going to liquidate 5% of the shares or 10% of the shares per year. And you just have to get in line to try to receive your investment back from that asset.
And that can happen with large insurance companies, as we've seen with some types of retirement plans that we're not affiliated with. They could not liquidate their real estate holdings, and that price... a lot of people lost money in that particular transaction.
Stat time.
All jumping
right.
in.
With
okay.
Beth Shire, what do you have today?
So, Congress's nonpartisan analyst, CBO, estimates that Trump's global tariff hikes could reduce deficits by over $3 trillion and cut federal interest payments by almost $1 trillion over the next decade. That's from Reuters. And then according to Reuters, the U.S. government is set to take almost 10% stake in Intel through a deal that converts government grants into equity share. The deal will give Intel $10 billion in funds to expand chip factories in the U.S. What are your thoughts on that?
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I'm entirely uncomfortable with that,
yep.
With the federal government investing in a private company. I'd really rather they not do that at all, and I don't care who's in power. I totally disagree with it, and I think the government should stay out of the private sector. They're allowed to tax the private sector. I would say for them to be granted rights because they're loaning money to Intel, does it mean it's... entirely bad? No, there are always good parts of it. But the problem is, where is the stop? You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once you've pierced that veil, if you will, it's just not a good thing to enter into because it gets the government involved in areas that they have plenty to do to defend us from bad people or bad countries. They don't need to get involved in business. Stay out of it. Keep your noses out.
It's
That's what I would say.
For those conflicts of interest, too.
Rear their ugly heads.
For sure.
That's right. Okay, go ahead, Beth, please.
Yes. So Starbucks has announced the cut of production from 7 days a week down to five. This comes after Starbucks capped raises for North American salaried employees to a fixed 2%. These budget cuts are expected to pay for upgrades elsewhere in the country. That's from Reuters, and that production is packaging, roasting, and things like that. So they'll still be open, but just production for grocery stores and different things like that. Yeah.
Everybody breathes a big sigh of relief.
Yeah, for sure.
And then according to the Pew Research Center, 7 in 10 Americans believe that the spread of false information online is a major threat to the U.S., making it the highest perceived threat. Terrorism and the condition of global economy took the next slots, with about 6 in 10 adults ranking it as a major threat.
What was the percentage of people that are concerned about online misinformation?
7 in 10.
70%.
Yeah.
Yeah. 30% are never online.
Right.
So those who are online are concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
As they should be.
We have to wrap up now, if you go to proutfinancialdesign.com, you can find phone numbers, contact information, everything you need. proutfinancialdesign.com. Thank you, Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Beth Shire.